Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So what a week it has been. The big speech. Lots of craziness going on the family values front from our GOP friends. And of course, the wing nuttery that we've always come to expect from our Republican friends. We'll get to all of those things. But first, let me introduce our all-star cast of panelists. Kristen Mink, mother, teacher, organizer there at the Center for Popular Democracy and co-founder of Masks for America. Kristen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda, former West Virginia State Senator, presidential candidate, and now current national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind. Rich, thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure, my brother.
And of course, Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Scott, thanks, man.
Hey, man.
So let's jump into the big issue, the big thing of the week, the speech. Let's go around the room, find out what grades, and then what were your thoughts on it? Rich, let's go with you. Grade?
I thought it was an A plus, man. I mean, I really liked it. I love the fact that, President Joe Biden talks about the people, talks about the working class, talks about unions. I think it's awesome. You know, I mean, if there was anything negative that I saw was really how, you know, the opposite side, you know, which we know is it's hard to see people on the opposite side want to stand up and give any credit for anything. But whenever he spoke about elevating half of the children in this country out of poverty, I think that deserved a standing ovation across the board. And I was surprised to not see that.
Absolutely. Scott, your thoughts?
Oh, sure. I know the bar is kind of low in regards to everything. So it's, you know, there's a curved kind of grade scale, but also it's super high. And what I mean by that is the Republican Party is going to hold him to the highest standard that's ever existed whatsoever. And they're going to nitpick every single thing, and they couldn't really do it. And so that gives them an A plus for me. I said it was a home run. I'm assuming that give it a couple months and I'll be, dissenting from what they're doing. I'll disagree with them and whatnot. But, you know, in the first 100 days, a lot of this is miraculous. And the speech was on point, and I really liked it.
Kristen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a great speech. I'll give him an A. I think that he spoke to a lot of the questions that some progressives had. I think he addressed not all of them, but he addressed a number of them. He hit on the $15 minimum wage, which we had been wanting him to push harder on, and that was really good to hear. And I think, you know, to Richard's point, I think it was at least, you know, you never want to see people not clapping for helping children, but it does really tell the tale of who the GOP really is right now. So he gave them an opportunity to show that they could be at all bipartisan, to show that they could be, you know, that can you care about children? No? Okay, well, there you go. You know, so it did put them on the spot in that way by offering such easy, you know, such easy policies to clap for, and still they couldn't come through.
Yeah, well, in Ted Cruz's defense, you know, he did have a long flight back from Cancun. He's kind of tired and probably slept through that important part.
May he never live that down.
Yeah, $174,000 a year, and you can't stay awake during a national televised speech. Good job, man. Come on, Texas. You didn't send your best this time, but we're going to give you another shot in the next election.
There is always that. Now, personally, I thought the speech was a little long. Now, my thinking is a little different. I wanted the call to action to be economic. I wanted him to – the first half of the speech was fabulous, hitting on the economic tones. We need to rebuild. We need to take opportunity out of this crisis. I thought it was great. My problem is we started checking boxes that it seemed a bit too muddled. I would have liked a shorter message and, hey, this is the direction. This is our next marching order. But I do get what everyone's saying, that it was a big speech and it was a lot there. What I did find interesting is a lot of the progressives, and maybe you'll weigh in on this, a lot of the progressives that I know back when, you know, Biden won South Carolina were basically crying in their almond milk. They were singing a different tune after his speech. And I think that's a pretty good thing. I think Biden has risen to the moment. Kristen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that not just his speech, but his first 100 days has in a lot of ways surpassed the expectations of progressives such as myself. And we want to give praise where praise is due, right? That's how we're going to move forward and be, you know, and be strong together. And I think that there are also places where he has been lacking, immigration, for example. And I think it's important that we are able to say that too. And I will say to his credit, I think that he has been engaging in a dialogue with progressives and with progressive organizations. It does feel like there, like communication is happening. We can see how he's really listened to the climate justice movement, the youth climate justice movement. We can see the work of a lot of liberal and progressive lobbying. We can see that in his first 100 days, we can see that in his speech. So I think, you know, it's not perfect. There are ways that he could be better, certainly, and things that he mentioned in his speech, like I would like to see those put into action, to Scott's point, you know, we'll see, we've got some words and we'll see how it looks as this rolls out. But there have been some pleasant surprises. He is governing more progressively than I certainly would have thought during the primary.
Now, one of the news organizations that, I follow pointed out that of his 61 promises, he's kept 26 of them already. And then of the 61, only three of them haven't been touched yet. So everything else is partially in the works. So a lot of what he talked about in the campaign, he's actually moving forward on. Wanted to get your thoughts, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that I want to remind people of is that it's not really the first 100 days. And so the way I think about it is even when he was sworn in, he wasn't really, you know, he didn't have his footing yet because there was no transition, basically, essentially. So, you know, when they and when they, what they came into was a worse mess than you'd ever imagine. Then they conveyed it, especially with the vaccine rollout. They had nothing. They were expecting states to fight over it. They were expecting states to control everything. And obviously that is not their role. They can't do that. So the federal government had to step in. And luckily we have experienced people from the Obama administration that were able to roll over. I think that we're going to have one of the things I mentioned on the campaign trail is people were worried, oh, Biden's too moderate. And I was like, well, but look at his staff. You look at Karine Jean-Pierre, who's from MoveOn and one of the most progressive people I know. Same thing with Jen Psaki. They're mostly women communication staff. I know the senior leadership is all women. They're making a vested effort on top of everything else. And I know that, you know, it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose, like they're constantly trying to do things, but they're actually trying, like for real. They're reaching out to people like me and engaging with us. You know, they're working with us on different things like, you know, making sure that we have access to different people who are public officials so that we can interview them, so that we can get the truth. You know, there's a lot of questions I have about things like the Mueller report and the release of that. And we're getting answers from people and we're getting not excuses. We're getting explanations as to where things are at, what's happening and what's in motion. And so that's why you don't see me complaining very much, because a lot of the things I'll do is behind the scenes and talking to people. But overall, I think that we have, you know, he may be the progressive kind of cover, as in he looks moderate. But in reality, I think this is going to be one of the more progressive, you know, administrations we'll ever have. And luckily, we need it right now.
No, I'm with you. Every day I see new people coming into the administration. In fact, one of my favorite people and one of my favorite guests that we've had here on the program, Celeste Drake, was named the very first director of Made in America at OMB, which I am just thrilled about, because it's that kind of level of commitment that I think we need to rebuilding our economy. And Rich, I wanted to get your thoughts, because during the speech, he mentioned the word jobs 46 times. I went back and counted them. For me, this is where my point was from the beginning. That was the message right there. It's all about jobs. It's all about rebuilding the economy and doing it in places like where you're from in West Virginia.
Absolutely. You know, we got to have those jobs to come to places like where I'm at, because the truth is that we are actually living in, you know, industries that are dying. And that's just the way that it is. And the only way that we're going to make a change is if those jobs come to these areas so that these people like coal miners can transition to those jobs. And that we're talking about jobs where people can raise a family on, because right now there's nothing here. My state has absolutely failed miserably in allowing anything to come in here, because it was always a fear that it would actually take away from the coal industry. So now we have nothing. So it's really good to hear about, you know, jobs coming to places. You know, this infrastructure plan that he's coming up with is absolutely phenomenal, going to create, you know, I mean, potentially millions of jobs. And I want to kind of speak, because like what Scott said, that there was no transition at all. And right now, I'm really impressed with no transition at all. He has literally, today I think we hit the 100 millionth person in this country that is fully vaccinated. And remember, they've already given over 250 million vaccination shots. So within the next month, we're going to have over 250 million Americans that are going to be fully vaccinated. You know, the relief package, Republicans, where I come from, received those stimulus checks and they cashed them and they needed those. So I'm seeing that President Joe Biden is getting things done for everybody. He's not picking party. He's actually just getting it done for the people. And it is such a breath of fresh air to see something like this going on. I absolutely love it.
No, and this is the way I think the Democratic Party regains the working class, because what we're seeing, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this pivot that we're seeing from the Republican Party right now of trying to be the party of the working class and trying to talk about working class values, where it's kind of, and Christian, you're laughing, and it's true. I mean, it's laughable, but they're giving it a shot. Let's get your first thoughts first, Christian.
I mean, it's just a total joke. Like, there's nothing there to substantiate it at all. They think that they can just say, I'm remembering that we're keeping it PG, but they think they can just say nonsense and that people will believe it's true. Nobody's that dumb, you know? Like, who was it? Was it Cruz? Somebody was like, we're like the blue jeans and beer party. Like, you just flew to Cancun, you know, because it got too cold. Well, people were dying around you. You know, they think that they can pull off this thing where they do whatever they want to do for them and their millionaire buddies. And then they just go out and say, you know, the opposite, say we're the party of the people. And it's just completely ridiculous. And I think, you know, what Biden's doing with, you know, the fact that people are getting cash in their homes, that we're going to be seeing these climate jobs, that we're going, you know, there's going to be these tangible effects that what, like Richard said, that people across parties are going to feel. I think that's what we need to undermine their messaging. We don't need to undermine it with words. We need to undermine it, you know, with action.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And in that action, I think, you know, as Biden pointed out in his speech, the Americans' jobs plan, as Biden said, is going to be the biggest increase in non-defense research and development on record. And it's about getting people back to work. And I love the fact that every chance he gets, he says that the middle class built the country and unions built the middle class. Again, it's about those jobs. It's about good paying jobs. And it's about, you know, them being here. Scott, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, though, because, you know, not one Republican voted for that rescue plan. Not one in the Senate. How can they now turn around and go, oh, we care about family values and we care about the working class?
A lot of them thought, you know, they were threatened. I know that some were threatened, but like, I don't understand why you're in Congress if you're afraid of a threat, because you're supposed, like, people get threatened all the time. I've gotten threatened over 10,000 times by Trumpers, serious threats that we had to actually report to authorities. So there's tens of thousands that I'm sure that are out there. But it really is, they're stuck in this kind of rut and they can't dig themselves out because they've got this gut rot. And so you have the Marge and you have the Boebert and you have the Matt Gaetz. Until they remove them from the party, they will bring them down completely. They will represent the entire party. That's why, you know, when Marge trends, we don't mind then carrying with the trend and explaining exactly who she is and how she represents, that's exactly what the Republican Party represents as a whole right now. And so it's, we may give her the spotlight, but that way she's raising money and somebody who's a viable Republican candidate somewhere else is not. You know, there's a lot of different tactics we'll have, but I think the easiest thing for us to do is to just let them do what they're doing and explain to the American people over and over again, here's what we stand for, here's where we're going with it. This is where these sleepy guys are at. They're not doing anything. They accomplished nothing. They lost power. We're not done yet. And I think, again, we had the insurrection to work with. I've been buried underwater since January for sure. Obviously, December was a surprise as well. But like January, then February, we had the second impeachment. There were so many things going on. We have just gotten organized right now. Like this is the last few weeks, I had to get my own vaccine. It was not the most fun for me, the reaction, but at the same time, it really, I think things will be headed to a better way, especially when you have people like Matt Gaetz, and we'll removed from Congress, but we'll have to do their job for them for now.
I say hang that albatross around their neck and let them drown with it.
Exactly.
Rich, I want to get your thoughts lastly on the rebuttal. You had South Carolina Senator Tim Scott come out and basically, you know, say what we knew they were going to say. Everything the Democrats want, it's socialism, it's all bad. We've got better ideas, but we're not going to tell you what they are.
Well, I thought that that was absolutely a horrible a path to take. You know, African Americans in this country absolutely live racism every single day in this country. We have African Americans that are being killed at an alarming rate because they move their hands from the 10 and 2 to the 9 and 3. We have a serious problem with race in this country. We just had a president that absolutely spewed nothing but hatred every time he opened his mouth. And for the Republican Party to put, and I hate to say this, you know, the single African American senator on the Republican side in plain view to basically state that America is not a racist country is a slap in the face to everybody who is out there right now that is trying to protest for equality in this country. It's a slap in the face to everybody who is now going to be disenfranchised because we have voter suppression laws that are being passed all across this country over a nothing but a lie. I think it is absolutely sickening what they did. And I think that Tim Scott should be ashamed of himself for even allowing himself to be pushed in front of the microphone like that to speak their talking points.
Christian, you got a thought? You want to chime in on that before we take a break?
I mean, putting him up there was racist in and of itself. They obviously picked the one black guy that they had to go up there and say that America's not racist, which we all know it is. He knows it is. And, you know, and I say they put him up there, I mean, like, that, you know, they nominated him or whatever, but he, you know, he has agency and he chose to do that. He is like the rest of the Republicans. They are there to further their own careers. They're there to enrich themselves. They're there to get their donations and keep themselves in power so they can keep making deals for their buddies. And he's doing the exact same thing because he knows that every word he was saying was total bull. So, you know, and to be able to go up there while people are putting their lives on the line to try to make this country a better place. And when we say, you know, we to say like the middle class built this country, I know the intention behind that, but like, let's back it up. Like, enslaved people built this country, you know, and that foundation is still here. Every, you know, and that seeps into our, I mean, that is rich in the fabric of America. So we're working on addressing that now. And so for him to go up there and spew stuff like that is just absolutely, it's appalling. It's appalling. And if you go and look and see like who the people are who like what he said, you know, they don't look like him for the most part.
Okay, good. Let's take a quick break. I hope you guys stick around through the break. We'll be right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day 8,000 UAW workers at the Alice Chalmers plant in Milwaukee voted overwhelmingly to walk off the job. Close to 12,000 production and maintenance workers were on strike across the country. Workers rode the post-war strike wave as whole industries moved to peacetime reconversion. Historian Eric Fur Slocum notes that UAW Local 248 had a historically militant left-wing leadership, was known for its support to housing desegregation campaigns in the city, and was a central driving force of Milwaukee's CIO Council. They had built a strong shop steward and grievance structure at Alice Chalmers and were sure victory was certain. Local President Robert Busey insisted wage increases were not at issue, but rather unresolved issues remained to be settled now that the war was finally over. Key points of contention were the company's demands to eliminate maintenance of membership agreements that guaranteed the closed shop and union dues. The company also wanted to stop paying stewards for the time involved in grievance procedures. The Alice Chalmers strike was a harbinger of things to come.
Historian Martin Halpern states that the company officials played a significant role in the crafting of Taft-Hartley legislation as the strike unfolded. Alice Chalmers was on a union-busting campaign and made no small effort to red-bait union leaders for months in local newspapers. By the fall, workers at the smaller plants had returned to work, but the Milwaukee local stood firm. Area CIO workers joined picket lines in support, only to be brutalized and arrested. The House Un-American Activities Committee arrived in town to investigate the strike, and the company instigated a vigorous back-to-work campaign. After 11 months, the strike was called off with no contract and 91 union leaders fired.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this week, got an interesting little bit of education on how the right wing views freedom and liberty. Yes, we hear it from them quite often. They're the party of personal responsibility, individual liberty. Yet, well, you had Tucker Carlson go on some bizarre screed about if your children are wearing masks, it's child abuse, and you should call child services, and we should, and you should go and mock them. And I'll be honest, I wish Tucker and his cute little bow tie would come and say something to me stupid like that to my face. We know he never would, because it's easy to sit and snipe and do the things that he did, but that has power. And there are people in our community who are probably dumb enough to go ahead and do this, especially now as we're getting towards the end of this. It's just craziness. But again, shows the whole talk about freedom and liberty is just a pile of bunk. And here to share some thoughts again on all this topic, the party of family values and freedom, our all-star panel, Kristen Mink, Scott Dworkin, and Rich Ojeda. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Hey, boom.
So let's start with you, Rich, since you're probably more in line with my school of thinking that someone came and snatched a mask off my kid's face, they'd have 10 broken fingers and a couple of arms. First off,
you know, Tucker Carlson, he has no thought about what the average family in this country is like and what they go through. We're talking about a person that was born with a diamond plated spoon, you know, in his fourth point of contact, and that's how he's always been. You know, at the end of the day, understand that right now Oregon and Washington states are about ready to have to close things back again because of the virus picking back up in those areas. So, you know, we're not out of the dark here. People are still getting sick. People are still dying. And to sit and listen to, you know, Tucker Carlson try to turn this and try to make it like, you know, a child abuse if you're allowing your children to wear a mask outside is absolute garbage. I don't even understand how people follow this person. I really don't. I mean, I don't watch him, but we see enough of his antics on nightly shows and things like that to see what this guy says. But I think he's pure trash, and I can't stand the man.
I'm with you. But Scott, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to go to you, Scott, because these are the people who tell us that they believe in individual freedom and individual liberty, and also simultaneously personal responsibility. This was that party. At least I think they told me that. Or did I miss something?
I hate wearing a mask.
I do too.
I can't stand wearing a mask, and I don't want to wear a mask. But I listen to science, and science says to do so if you're in a crowded space. If you're fully vaccinated now, the rules change. I know the teacher who's a friend of mine, has already had to deal with this, and their rule was they wouldn't even let the kid into the school because they refused to wear that mask. It was the parent's decision. I think that it just sets a terrible example. And I think people need to realize when you're doing these anti-vaccine and anti-mask sort of things, you're killing people. Like you're making people sick. It is Nazi-like like that. And I hate going there, but like they went there. And if you look back in history, they're always looked as pariahs, you know, a year after after it passes the pandemic. So I think that when we get to the bottom of this, they're going to be responsible for a lot of the death in this country. Fox News specifically, I think it's going to be, it's going to be people like that are going to cause uproarious kind of like I don't know. I guess it could lead to assault. There's going to be something that happens because of what Tucker Carlson said that hurts somebody. Like, that is a fact. Every single pig vomit that he spews, I'll be careful about my language. But I just wish that he could do better. And this is not about politics. It's never been about politics. I pushed it because that's what science said. And anybody who has a religious view can agree with me on the fact that God created the scientists, God created the everything, the chemicals and everything that they do with it. The studies and the equipment were made by people, were made by God. So if you go back in that way, then everybody should be wearing a mask because that is what you're supposed to do. It's a test. It's a test, and we know who's right and who's wrong just in general as humanity. And so we need to hold them accountable, and that's something that we need to do over the next few years once we pass this pandemic.
Hey, Rick, if I can real before you go to Kristen here, I just want to ask, and Scott maybe could answer, do you think because of this that there may be like class action lawsuits against things like Fox News when people start to realize that these certain people, they pretty much, you know, drank from the cup of Fox News, and that's what maybe, you know, convinced them to not wear masks, to not social distance and things like that? Do you think that's something that could be coming down the pipe later for these organizations?
There are families that I've spoken with already that are going to sue Fox News and other organizations for doing that. Yes.
I can't wait
to
see
that. I've lost loved ones that were fans of that show, and they cited that as part of the reason they end up dying of COVID. And so I think that there's actual evidence that proves it as well. So I think it's going to happen. Yes.
So let's go to Kristen, who I view the expert here. Your mother, your teacher, so you've got those things, but also the co-founder of Masks for America. So I think you're a little invested into this. What would you do if someone came up to you and said, "Take that stupid mask off that kid"?
Sorry.
Oh my God. You know,
I get the male rage. I want to see it from a female's point of view. I'm sorry. I know what I would do.
I mean, you know, like as a mom, obviously, you know, there's no greater like superpower than being a mom. So my instinct, obviously, I think would be similar to your guys, but we're in a special situation where like breathing that person's air is dangerous. You know, they're probably not wearing a mask. So, you know, it's a little different than somebody in a different scenario coming up and doing something, you know, harmful to my child. You
Excellent
know?
Point.
So in this case, you know, we'd have to move away quickly. I would want to make their day worse in some way. So, you know, but the priority would be like moving out of their space, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a weird thing for me. Whatever happened to mind your own damn business? What does my kid wearing a mask or me wearing a mask have to do with you? It's insane because I go
irony.
Back to these are the people who told us in personal responsibility, take care of yourself, and personal liberty, mind your own damn business. Not them.
Yes, but you have to understand that the Republican Party is the party of the do as I say, not as I do party. And that's exactly how they are.
Right. Their personal responsibility just means that, you know, they want you to take personal responsibility to do exactly whatever they tell you to do. And as soon as you want to do something different or be someone different or whatever, now they have a problem with it. So they don't believe in personal freedom at all. They believe in everybody doing exactly what they think is the right way, which is like racist and homophobic and transphobic and anti-science and all of those things.
Kristen, what if you got asked by, just curious, if you had a student in a class or whatnot, and they said, "My mom and dad watch Hannity or Tucker, we don't have to wear masks," or whatever, how would you deal with a student that has to wear a mask in the classroom or whatnot in that kind of situation where they cite Fox News or Tucker and they're like, "I don't need to wear a mask," and they use that as evidence?
I mean, I've been in similar situations. So I stopped teaching at the end of last year, which was a coincidence. I had planned to leave. I got asked to come on board the Center for Popular Democracy. And so I do like organizing and projects and stuff for them. But I've been in similar situations where I've had like conservative students. And I'm very much a believer in that we're empowering students to learn, you know, to make good decisions. So I ask them follow-up questions and I tell them to bring me the research. And, you know, they have to be able to cite sources. They have to be able to cite good sources. So, you know, like I had a kid who said, that he wanted to write his research paper on how like immigrants were coming from Mexico and they were like rapists and murderers and like destroying the country. And I was like, okay, you bring me a few sources that you're gonna cite And we'll like take a look at some of the research. And he came back a few days later and he was like, well, I couldn't find anything except for this one thing. And I think it's just somebody's blog post. And like, I had to translate it from Russian. And so, you know, and then it's a conversation about, you know, that exercise is what I want him to apply later. Telling him one piece of information, just like telling that kid, like, your parents are wrong, you have to put a mask on, that's not going to serve that kid later. I need that kid to realize that, like, I need to be questioning even my parents, you know, I need to be doing the research myself and applying good values and morals and making my own decisions. So that's actually like a great opportunity to give a kid that lesson.
And to steal a line from a guest we had out a couple of weeks ago, Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck, you may know who he is, watching YouTube with your mouth open ain't research. Which I just think is a brilliant line, and I told him I'm stealing it, but I do give him credit for it. And that's the thing. I mean, I keep hearing from people, wow, there's research out there, and I'm sorry, somebody blathering on YouTube, not research.
I think that was absolutely really a smart thing to do, Kristen, because that kid went home and that kid sat down and started trying to find, you know, the answers, and realized that kid realized the answers don't exist. So I think that probably was more valuable to him than anything.
Yeah, but if you listen to Fox News,
it's got to be on in his house, you know. So yeah. I need that kid to be actively questioning every day moving forward.
Yeah,
that's just because of the liberal media bias that there's no resources out there. Don't you know?
Oh my gosh, it's so cult-like. It's really wild.
Just watch the Rick Smith Show.
There you go. There's always that. I want to move on real quick because, you know, obviously the Party of Freedom, not so much. Now the Party of Family Values, they had a problem with Joe Biden's speech and the call for additional education. I've been saying for decades we need to move K through 12 to at least 14, get an associate's degree, technical training, go back to industrial arts programs and vo-tech programs. I'm thrilled that Biden has brought that out. But also I believe in a universal pre-K program to give kids an opportunity to be in a structured environment to learn a little bit more. That was met with, the derisive term, just universal daycare. And you had one commentator, this J.D. Vance guy, who said that universal daycare is class war against normal people. I take offense to that. Let's start with you, Rich. Is this class war against normal people?
Absolutely not. You know, I think that President Biden talking about, you know, giving 2 years of community college. You know, I spent 4 years in the classroom, and as a teacher, you know, I taught ROTC. But I'm going to tell you right now, I absolutely come across young kids that were brilliant, but they didn't have nothing. I'm talking about as poor as you can get in the Appalachian Mountains. I mean, these kids have to go to McDonald's to even do their homework because they have no connectivity when they go up their hollers. So, you know, hearing about, you know, somebody who's talking about doing something to at least give these kids an opportunity to get 2 more years of study that can open doors and help them be able to elevate themselves out of poverty is phenomenal. In terms of daycare, you know, we've got people right now that are struggling greatly. And you know, most households now have the mother and the father are both working. And right now, this global pandemic, when it happened, after the school shut down, one of those two parents has had to stop and then spend their time at home with their kids. And that took away from their money that they were used to making. And it has absolutely put them in a serious situation where they are struggling greatly. So, you know, something like providing universal daycare for children, to me, especially where I come from in these areas, is absolutely crucial. It is a wonderful topic of conversation to talk about. And it's something that I believe I would support wholeheartedly.
Let me get your thoughts, Kristen. You're the educator. Is universal pre-K something? Is it education? Is it daycare? Where do you throw that?
Well, I'll start with that first. It doesn't even matter because working parents need a place to have their kids. So even if it was just daycare, there is value. There's value to families. There's value to the economy. There's value to people's careers in having a safe place for your kids to be during the day. So J.D. Vance saying that this is something that is not for normal people just shows that he doesn't actually know any normal people, because normal people need to go to work and your kids have to be somewhere. And second of all, it's incredibly insulting to pre-kindergarten teachers who work so hard and are underpaid that to say that it's just daycare. They're working really hard to get those kids, learning your, getting started on reading. And so I actually taught in a preschool for a year. And there's like curriculum, there's, you know, you're working so hard to give these kids an enriching environment that they experience as play, to give them space to room, you know, room to grow and learn. And you know, to say, write it off like, oh, it's just daycare. Frankly, actually, is also insulting to daycare providers who do the same thing. Like, they're providing awesome. My mother-in-law was a daycare provider for years, and she took her kids on field trips, and she taught them, you know, like multiple languages. She was like teaching Spanish and stuff. So, you know, it's just incredibly insulting and out of touch, and shows that, you know, they are absolutely not the party of family values, or who are thinking about family at all.
Real quick, you want to jump in on that, Scott?
I mean, he forgot. I'll give my North Carolina twang up here. J.D. Vance forgot where he came from, and you know, I know where he came from, and it's despicable to act like you can relate to people when you're rich and you're out of touch. And so I think he got roasted for it, and he deserved every second of it.
He did.
You know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with helping people, and so you can call it whatever you want. We're going to help as many Americans as we can in as many ways as possible, because that's what government is supposed to do. We're not supposed to hoard money, ignore you, and then be corrupt as we can be so that people can consolidate power. This is why Republicans lost the House, the Senate, and the White House, because they are out of touch with everybody, the American people, and they're in their little bubble trying to choose their voters by committing voter fraud. With racist election laws, like in Georgia. And I think it's just going to get worse from here. We're going to actually have to face some bigger bridges. But for now, you know, people like J.D. Vance make me sick, and he has no place in public space whatsoever.
Now, I see someone like Josh Hawley, who I hate the fact that I kind of agree with on this issue. He has come out with an idea of paying a single parent $6,000 a year, or a married couple $12,000 a year, to make a choice between, you know, daycare and pre-K, and maybe a parent staying home. And I got to tell you, there's part of me, I guess it was, you know, growing up watching Leave It to Beaver, and maybe it was because of the family I never had. But I do find value in one parent being able to stay home. And I do find value in the fact that maybe we move to an economy where you can exist on one income, like my grandparents' generation did. It's been difficult for my wife and I, because when we had kids, before we decided to have kids, we agreed somebody needs to be home to raise them. I was hoping it was going to be me, but it wasn't, because I made more money. But and she's done a phenomenal job. Should we give parents that choice as opposed to just universal pre-K? Should there be a choice? Let me start with you, Kristen.
I mean, I have no problem with paying people to stay home. Like, parenting is a job. Parenting is a full-time job. And we should make it possible for people to do that. I don't like Hawley's plan because for a few reasons. First of all, he presents it as a counterpoint. What we should be doing is what you just said, Rick, which is making sure that people have the options to do what's best for their family. So if they want their kids to be able to go to preschool, so that they can go to work and that's what works best for their family, we should be making that possible. We are paying taxes. It's not like free money, you know. The people gives the government money, and they're supposed to do things with it that help people. So it's, you know what I mean? So it's not like the idea of handouts, like, that's my money, you know, like, I want you to pay for my preschool so that I can do my job. Yes. Right. You know, and somebody who wants to stay home should be able to do that. It wasn't that long ago that was a totally viable option. And many families would like to have that option now. Now, the idea that you're going to say that married couples get to make more than people who are not married. That's totally flawed, obviously. Putting that aside for a moment, because people who are low income and you know, marginalized people of color, all of these things are less likely to be married and more likely to be cohabitating, more likely to be single parents and so on. That kid still requires the same amount of money to stay alive. So drawing those lines is purely just them putting their values into their like terrible values into their policymaking again. So I object to that. But yeah, pay people to stay home. Sure.
Yeah, I'm there. But here's the thing. These are the people who are just a day ago railing against socialism. Scott, isn't this socialism?
You know, I don't think that Republicans understand what the word socialism means, because when they present policies like that, they act like it's not. No, we're just taking your tax dollars and giving it back to you. So they have excuses for everything, but essentially it would be. And, you know, the idea behind it, I think we can find some kind of middle ground here. I think that there's actually, they're opening the door here where it's not an olive branch, because it's fake kind of negotiating tactics where they're like, this is what we're going to do. And we're like, all right, hold on. We have this plan, which actually worked, because your thing is just, you know, uncrayoned that you drew at a restaurant somewhere. Ours was written by professionals and lawyers and people who know what they're doing. So I think it's, I don't know. As of right now, I think that we don't do enough. The whole point of government is not to have power. When you get elected to office, you lose all of your power. That's how it should be. As in, let me define that. When you get elected to office, you work for the people. You do not work for yourself and your career and what's next and let's figure out how we can raise this money. You need to be like the AOCs of the world and actually do work and propose policies, write things, and make sure that you present yourself to the world and actually represent your district and do your job. And they're not doing their jobs. They're just fundraising and trying to figure out a way to claw their way back by cheating and committing election fraud. So nothing's going to change right now. It's going to be a fake sort of olive branch, but I'm willing to sit down with them to talk about it, because I think they'll act like, oh, we won, we out negotiated. Whatever spin they want, go ahead with it. But again, I think there is some common ground here that we can actually meet on.
Whatever we can do to help families, help workers, I'm in favor of. Rich, last word.
You know, I grew up with a mother who stayed home with us when we were kids. I was fortunate when I was an officer in the military and me and my wife started having kids. She was a stay-at-home mother. I see the benefit in that, but then I also look at where I'm from right now in southern West Virginia, where literally the only jobs that we have is Walmart, McDonald's, and Arby's, other than what's left of the coal industry. So, you know, to me, this is something that could absolutely, I think it could help the people. And if you want to allow someone the ability to be able to stay home with their kids, I think that's phenomenal, especially if they really care and really want to do what they can to help their children. You know, we always know that you're going to find those people out there that will take money and use it for the wrong reasons. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of leaning where you're leaning, Rick, where I think it would be something that could be beneficial for the kids out there.
No, I have one thing, sure. Actually, Rick, about this. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, when Holly is proposing this, we know what he's picturing, which is a like heterosexual couple and it's the wife that's staying home with the kids and it's the husband that's going to work, right? We know that that's what he's picturing. And we know that that is not, you know, an inclusive representation of what we have in America. So I think, you know, yes, that I think people should be getting a UBI. And what's interesting is with the COVID packages and this Holly proposal is that they're like, we're kind of making movements toward that we haven't seen in years. But I think that we also need to make sure that we are fixing the, you know, income inequality that we're, you know, because if couples are looking and saying like, well, who's making more, right? To Rick's point, who's making more? Well, it's more likely that even if they're in the exact same industry in the exact same role, right, that the man is going to be making more. So I think that we have a lot of work to do to make sure that women have equal, you know, pass to all of the different careers, and that their income opportunities are the same.
There you go. Last word. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1899. That was the day that Idaho miners detonated 50 cases of dynamite at the Bunker Hill and Sullivan Mine in Wardner. For nearly a decade, Idaho miners and owners had been locked in a bitter battle in the Coeur d'Alene district. The mining companies fought against unionization. They hired Pinkerton detectives to infiltrate union meetings and fire those who dared to hold a union card. In 1893, the Western Federation of Miners was founded and became a major organizing union in the region. Bunker Hill remained non-union, drawing the ire of workers in the surrounding mines. A group of miners took over a train and loaded it with dynamite. The Western Federation of Miners paper, the Idaho State Tribune, described what happened next, writing, quote, "A detachment of Union miners armed with Winchester rifles was dispatched to the mountainside beyond the mill, and the work of placing under the mill the 3,000 pounds of dynamite taken from the magazine of the Frisco mine at Gem was commenced. At no time did the demonstration assume the appearance or the attitude of a disorganized mob. All of the details were managed with the discipline and precision of a perfectly trained military organization. The response was swift and brutal. Federal troops were called in. Along with gun-toting thugs hired by the company, they arrested every man they could find, not just miners. Even a doctor and a postmaster were swept up in the arrests. More than 1,000 men were arrested. They were held in a makeshift bullpen made from a converted barn. Some were held as long as a year without any formal charges filed until the unionization effort was crushed. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the party of personal responsibility, party of liberty and freedom, as they kept telling us. Also, party of family values. Yes, they are the party of family values, or at least they claim they are. I do find it interesting that Matt Gaetz and his associate, who I think we all know, having sex with an underage girl, a minor, something that is a crime in Florida, something I hope gets him a long time in jail. Now they're coming out and saying they're the victims somehow. Somehow Gaetz and his buddy are the victims in this because they claim she lied. She lied. It's all her fault. And actually wrote a letter to Roger Stone and brought Roger Stone into this. And here's here to share some thoughts on, well, the family values party. I've got our all-star cast, Kristen Mink, Scott Dworkin, and Rich Ojeda. Let's start with you, Kristen. Let's start first. Your thoughts on Matt Gaetz, the victim in this.
Just incredible. I mean, there is no low that they won't stoop to. It's just, I mean, it's part of the pattern of just saying the exact opposite of the truth. It doesn't, you know, fact or fiction, it doesn't matter to them. They're going to say whatever they want and hope that people believe their lies. But, you know, I think this whole thing is bigger than Matt Gaetz. And yes, I hope he gets everything that's coming to him for this. But, you know, he wasn't doing this by himself, first of all. And it was part of the culture. It's part of the culture of the GOP at this point. Very much a boys club. Kind of thing, you know, the idea that they're there on the House floor showing, you know, he's showing these pictures around to his colleagues, right? And they're laughing about it. You know, and it's not like he became a pariah, like clearly this was like a repeated thing. The idea that these people are legislating policies that affect women, right? They think that they can offer up, you know, that they can offer up policy opinions when they clearly completely disrespect women and girls. So, I mean, I think that none of them should be in office after this. None of them, because none of them deserve to be representing any of those constituents. It's appalling. It's disgusting.
Scott, do you want to jump in?
I give them 3 months until Kinzinger, Mitt Romney, and Liz Cheney take over the party. Like the time is ticking on that, and you can see things start to shift, but it's not enough right now. You know, our investigation into him, we're finishing the final details on that. Matt Gaetz, that is, in his campaign finance. I fundraised for 15 years, so I know how to read FEC reports like none other, and I get in the zone. We flagged more disbursements on his report than I ever have. There were actually three times as many than there were on the former guy's report that we have questions about. A lot of them about resort stays that are a week long that only you have one room. And so we'll have a lot of things that are coming out with that. And we're turning that over to the ethics committee, which he is under investigation right now for. The next thing, and I know you disagree with this, Rick, but when we have a person in Congress that, you know, yes, we want them to walk in their own propeller if they choose to do so. But at the same time, there comes a point where somebody needs to be removed from Congress. Somebody needs to be removed, at least from the committees, especially if they're under investigation by the DOJ and they're on the Judiciary Committee. That is a conflict of interest, clearly. They could look into their own case via that committee. And so that can't happen. So he has to be removed from the committee. I think we can make that happen in the next month. I think we'll be able to get a member of Congress to do so as well. On top of that, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is not a small investigation. This hasn't been happening for a short time. This is part of a larger investigation, not only for his potential assault, but also for the, that's what I would call it, because you can't have sex with an underage girl. Anyways, long story short, there's a lot more here. This is not just this. This is also public corruption. This is also taking money, taking sexual favors in order to do things politically. And you know, I think that we're going to uncover this. This is just like any other person that was in the former guy's world, where there is so much underneath this. It is disgusting. It's going to be sticking around for the next year and a half or so. He is going to be a pariah in the Republican Party. I give him 3 weeks until the final kind of, I think some women are going to come forward with some stories.
Yeah, the only thing we disagree on, I don't think he should be in Congress. I think he should be locked up, is I don't think the Democrats should do the heavy lifting. I think this is a Republican problem. Let them deal with it. And you know, once they move forward, then everybody goes forward. But I don't want it to look overly partisan. This is something, this should be a nonpartisan issue. We don't want pedophiles in Congress. That's not hard. I don't think that's hard to come up with. What do you think, Rich?
I don't want insurrectionists in Congress either, but are they doing anything about that? No.
Excellent. Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Joel Greenberg and Matt Gaetz actually preyed on this young woman, this young girl is what it is. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is something that has been going on for quite some time. You know, Matt Gaetz has, I believe he's won 3 congressional races, and he's been on that floor. He's been, you know, making up those sex games where they provide points for what you do. These are people that are supposed to be the leaders of the free world. And they're on the, you know, standing in the halls of Congress, showing nude photographs of other women that probably have no clue that their photographs are being shown to other members of Congress. Every single one of those people that have been showed those pictures, They need to be brought to justice too. I mean, this is absolute, you know, it's horrific what this guy has done. And you're right, the Republican, it should not be partisan. You know, both sides should absolutely be sickened at what's going on. And it should not be the Democrats having to do the heavy lifting, because if the Republicans had
shred of decency,
decency whatsoever,
morality,
they would be the ones that would be bringing this to light and saying that this has got to go. Yeah. I mean, this is absolute unacceptable.
But it said they were laughing. They were looking at the pictures and laughing along with them.
Exactly. So. And they all need to go. They all need to be called. You know, all of them probably have daughters. And you have to ask them, what would you think if this jackaloon was on the House floor showing pictures of your daughter? And I wonder how they would feel then.
I think they'd act like they were okay with it, because that's where the Republican Party is right now.
That's sad, who they are. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on this week. Donald Trump, the former guy, said he called himself the father of the vaccine. He says that if he weren't president, the vaccine, you wouldn't have had a vaccine for 5 years, 3 to 5 years to be minimum. He said he got it done in less than 9 months, and it's only because of him. Is he the father of the vaccine?
He's the father of the disease.
that took a lot shorter time than I thought it was going to.
I mean, at the end of the day, how can this guy sit here? First and foremost, you know, when people are dying, and this guy called it a hoax. He even said that if he won or if he lost on November the 3rd, that the next day you would no longer even hear of the vaccine, or not the vaccine, but of the global pandemic. This guy absolutely had people following him that died because of that. This guy has been absolutely a joke. He spewed nothing but hatred. And I'm telling you, I mean, for him to sit here to have no infrastructure whatsoever to pass over to the new president shows how little he cares about the American people who at that point were dying at literally 3,500 a day.
I will give him credit for the flashlight and the Clorox. You know, the rectal flashlight and the Clorox. I'll call him the father of the rectal flashlight. How about that?
That'll go. I'll give it that.
You know, I mean, I just want to let him fade into obsolescence. You know, all he wants is attention. He didn't do anything productive when he was in the presidency. All he did was damage and harm. And all he wants is attention. So I don't want to retweet anything he said. I don't want to talk about what he said. I don't want to say he's a joke because he's a serious.
That's probably a good way to leave that with him. So since that was a lot shorter than I thought. Let me get your guys' thoughts on this Ray Garofalo, this Louisiana representative who said that we need to be teaching the good of slavery in school. As the educator, Kristen, is there good to slavery that I missed?
There is no good to slavery. That's an easy one. I mean, that's obviously just incredibly racist and ignorant and wildly offensive. And he should not be having any control over anything because he's obviously a racist at core. We've heard talk like that out of Republicans in the past as well. And
I would like to hear what he thinks the good is. I mean, me personally, Rich, do you see any good? I mean, is there something that I missed?
No, absolutely not. I mean, but this is part of what they want to do. This is part of what Donald Trump was talking about doing, basically, you know, repackaging history in this country with the positive light. But at the end of the day, if you look at, you know, how they, you know, transported slaves to this country, it is absolutely sickening, you know, for a person like that. And, you know, there is a lot of African-American people in Louisiana. And I'll tell you right now, every single one of them should be right now up in arms calling for this man to be removed from his position of authority. It's absolutely sickening for anybody to even think something like that, especially to actually speak it, try to push legislation towards it.
I'm with you,
it's
Scott.
It's a message by and for white nationalists, white supremacists. That's all it is. He know, of course, there's nothing good about slavery unless you're a white supremacist.
There you go. Scott, you get the last word.
Technically, Trump's had slaves before. Technically, he didn't pay a lot of people in Dubai. Technically, he's had hundreds of people he didn't pay that did slave labor for him, that were slaves. So of course he wants to whitewash, I think that's the word, or he wants to, you know, act like history is different. We have to admit what happened in the past is disgusting, and what we were built upon is not as bright as we painted it to be. And once we can face that truth, then we can build a new future. But until we recognize that, we cannot.
There you go, guys. I appreciate the time. Kristen Minx, Mink, thank you for taking time for us. Scott Dworkin, Rich Ojeda, thanks so much for spending a little time with us. I appreciate it. Look forward to having you guys back again.
Anytime, brother.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated. Good stuff. Look, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to find the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Love to hear your thoughts on who'd you like to see on the panel next week. What issues would you like to hear discussed? Again, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com is my email. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.